society that expects you to behave in a certain way. So we are going to be discussing that. I am joined by Miss Kat and Miss Misty here. Go ahead and say hello. Make sure you guys are on there. And yeah, we're going to be talking about the pragmatic perspective of this nuclear family and how it's been fading since the 1950s and what's really been left in its wake. You know, we have a lot of ideas about what love is and what our role is here in this world these days, but we don't really have a modern definition for love and marriage and motherhood and these things that are sort of expected of us in this society. So we're just going to have a good time having a conversation. And of course, we want you to call in and be a part of that conversation. So please do 895-1114. Or if you'd rather message us on the Facebook page, I will do my diligence to try and make sure I get you on the air. But first, I want to play a song called Disclosure, When a Fire Starts to Burn. This is a song that just made me smile so much this morning. It's a tribute to my dear friend Adele, who's coming to visit me this weekend for my birthday. I love her.
How do you feel your momentum? And how do you get into your zone, right? And I'm glad you asked. There's three things, and you better catch it. My mama used to tell me that people love to watch the fire burn. There's one thing I know about life, one thing that I know about life. It's a guarantee. Change is inevitable. As much as you want to be in your comfort zone, as much as you would like to be stable, as much as you would like to have a comfortable environment, the realization is everything changes. Here's my last one.
Carl.
You gotta give me that term again. Spontaneous combustion, right?
Right.
And what happens is,
when a fire starts to burn, right, and it starts to spread, she gonna bring that attitude home. You don't wanna do nothing with their life. When a fire starts to burn, right, and it starts to spread, she gonna bring that attitude home. You don't wanna do nothing with their life. When a fire starts to burn, right, and it starts to spread, she gonna bring that attitude home. You don't wanna do nothing with their life. When a fire starts to burn, right, and it starts to spread, she gonna bring that attitude home. You don't wanna do nothing with their life. When a fire starts to when a fire starts to burn, right, and it starts to spread, she gonna bring that attitude home. You don't wanna do nothing with their life. When a fire starts to burn, right, and it starts to spread, she gonna bring that attitude home. You don't wanna do nothing with their life. When a fire starts to burn, right, and it starts to spread, she gonna bring that attitude home. You don't wanna do nothing with their life. When a fire starts to burn, right, and it starts to spread, she gonna bring that attitude home. You don't wanna do nothing with their life. When a fire starts to Love in the 21st Century is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members and by the Trailhead Adventures, serving outdoor enthusiasts on the ridge with all season apparel, travel wear, footwear, outdoor gear, and tech tips. For information on upcoming adventures, visit trailheadgear.com or by calling 877-6876. Trailhead Adventures is located in Paradise at 6265 Skyway. When a fire starts to burn, right, and it starts to spread, she gonna bring that attitude home. Who don't wanna do nothing with their life? When a fire starts to burn.
So this is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, and we are discussing the modern world of the melting pot in comparison and in conjunction with the nuclear family, and how it has somehow become, you know, the ideal prevalence that we're all aware of. The mom, the dad, the kids in the home, maybe one of each, a dog and a cat, who knows. But that's not really the modern world that we're all living in. I'm reminded of the TV show The Modern Family or something like that, where a lot of different people are usually in the home, and sometimes that's grandparents raising children, sometimes that's family members from other parts of the country, and it's just a really different view. And so I have invited Misty and Kat here to have a conversation from the point of view as of three strong women that are hailing from different locations of this nation on this generational and cultural story of love that we've been taught and how that rolls for ourselves, basically shaped our identities. Please join our conversation. Let us know what you think about the modern family and how the image is projected in our society on the media, ideal relationship, and what's okay and what's not okay in relation 1-4. Thank you, Kat and Misty, for joining me once again.
Yeah, thanks for welcome having us.
Yes. And so maybe we could start off by just maybe telling a little bit about each of ourselves. Like, what is our story? Where do you come from, Kat, if you don't mind giving it a start?
Oh, sure.
And, just home. And what kind of story do you identify with when you think of love?
Well, I grew up with a single mother early on. My parents got divorced when I was about one. I'm from Kansas City, so Midwest, a lot of kind of that classic American tale of, you know, people in the white picket fence kind of house. Like, grew up in the suburbs. So I had a stepfather come into my life when I was a young girl, and so incorporating him into the family, and that really expanded, how I could bring someone onto that level in my heart and really accept on a family level. And then beyond that, you know, both of my parents, my biological parents, my mother and my father's side, have these amazing love stories of my grandparents. And so these were sort of like the legends that I grew up with of like what love really was. And so while I came from like a broken love story, I had this other ideal that I'd always strived toward growing up. So love and partnership has been a prevalent theme in my life.
Absolutely. Misty, you want to add what your personal experience has been?
Oh, I do, because it's so interesting. Okay, so I was raised by my great-grandmother and my great-great-grandmother, so I guess that's interesting in its own way. My mom was away. She was a drug addict. My grandmother was away. She was a drug addict. So my great-grandmother and my great-grandmother kind of coalesced and made this thing happen. No men were involved in this whole shebang. And so it was, you know, now that I look at it as an adult, I think, okay, well, that was a very female-dominated kind of ideal of love, right? Well, what does that mean? It doesn't mean anything if there aren't, you know, gender-specific ideas of love, but there obviously are. And so that means a lot to me as a human being now, dealing with what it means to love people and to love, you know, other people in the 21st century. But I grew up in Dallas, Texas, and I don't know, it's just a tough situation to really deal with, to think about, so now I am supposed to be an adult. What does that mean? I don't know. I don't know what that means. You know, does that, what does that mean? I don't know. So I think we're all kind of there, right?
I think by age limit, we're all there in this room anyway. Yeah. But I think that we're all trying to figure it out as well. And right. I think that part of this, the reason of having this conversation, as we talked about a little bit earlier when we met to talk about this show and the concept of talking about love on the radio, is to open the door of questioning what roles we play in the world, because we do. I mean, there's a quote that I'm reminded of, the whole world's a jest, or the whole world's a stage, you know? And it's true. We play some role to somebody, whether or not we identify with it and whether or not we've accepted it. I think it's a good opportunity whenever possible to bring our awareness to that role and to see how we feel about it and to see if we identify with it. That's one of the reasons I specifically put in here love, marriage, and motherhood, because I'm approaching my 30th birthday. And that's definitely a big thing that, like, we were talking about earlier today, that, like, our society has a particular view about women and what they should be doing at a certain age and who they should be doing it with and whether or not they should be, you know, single or not. And that's, you know, I could say from being raised in a home, you know, bicultural home, that my mother definitely had a strong inclination to want me to have children when I was, you know, 5 or 6 years younger than I am now. And now I'm approaching the age that she had her last child. And just the difference that means culturally for my mother's family, as well as sort of like my parents having to be like, oh, okay, like you were like, okay, like this is what it is. I mean, I don't know what it is either. I mean, I don't know, like, am I an adult now? Like, I don't know. Like, am I going to be a mother? I don't know. Like, but I don't, but I'm very aware that society has an effect on us on whether or not we make those decisions. And so that's part of the reason of having this conversation. And Kat, you mentioned earlier today when we were talking about the effect of the stories that are played out through our media, and the idea also with property and our relationships. Do you remember talking about that?
Oh, I think just thinking about women's roles, I've been thinking about just the institution of marriage specifically. That's been something that's kind of been spinning around, and just how there's that, you know, be mine, you're mine, and where does that come from? And I feel like in some ways that comes from, you know, when women, you know, there's the dowry and you were someone's property.
Right.
And just how that's as you know, as women have become more free, specifically, you know, in the United States, and seeing that progression of, you know, like I use the reference a lot about my mother and how she wasn't allowed to wear pants until her senior year of high school. And like that was just one generation removed. So thinking about how far, and like a woman in my position, in our position, we have more freedom than any women before us. And so it's a really exciting time. But what that means, and when, you know, when we bring that into the relationship model. And so when that is becoming more and more balanced, and so taking away as women as property became taken away from the marriage model, and it became more about partnership and love. And like in the modern times, like what does that do? What are the effects of that?
Absolutely. And what you're reminding me of is also the dynamic between men and women, and how that has changed, and how and whether or not we are okay with it, I think is an important thing to recognize, because there's a lot of, we had a show a few weeks ago where we talked about feminism and chivalry, which we got schooled on chivalry. We had an expert call in and tell us, like, let me really tell you what chivalry is all about, because it's a really dynamic thing. It's not just open indoors, and you know, there's a whole ancestry to it. But how, you know, being a strong woman, which I would identify the three of us as, you know, strong women, that how that affects our dynamics with men, and how whether or not men are, one, comfortable with it, two, whether or not that means there's a different treatment from men specifically because of the ideal that is projected. So, for instance, if Jonah had brought up doing something chivalrous, for instance, that was what we were talking about, like opening a chair for somebody was the example, and whether or not that would be accepted well with, you know, a woman that was quote unquote a feminist. I wouldn't call myself a feminist. I would call myself a strong woman that wants to represent for myself. But how that changes the dynamics between men and women, and how men and women are able to help move forward in that, because we had a story that made sense. We had a story that was like, you know, the man was the breadwinner, and the woman stayed at home, and she took care of the kids. And now that story hasn't been existent for 50 or so years, at least. And as we are transpiring into this new space, how do we interact with each other? How do both parties feel equal and feel validated in that space?
Sure. And I think, you know, it's like you said, we had this specific story. We had this specific model, and like you were referring to before, you know, the United States and also the 21st century, it's a melting pot. It's an integral reality that we live in. And so we have this palette to draw from and create new stories. And I think it's something that we're having to review a lot of what we do, like traditions and a lot of old models for things, and deciding if we're going to renew those stories or maybe take it apart and build something new. So it's an interesting time for everybody to come back to the drawing board and create something.
Absolutely. As we were talking earlier too, it's like, are we really living in the 21st century? Because that was something that I added in the post when I was promoting the show for Facebook today. It's like, we claim we live in, I mean, physically, this is the 21st century. Like, we are living in it, but our models and ideals and our practices and our, you know, the culture that we've created today is not. It's very much based on something that is, you know, gender specific and role specific and identity specific, like to a model that was 50 or so years ago, that, like, you know, it's still the ideal that, you know, women are supposed to, like, take care of the kids, that women are supposed to, you know, go home and cook you some dinner after they get off work. Not only supposed to work, they're supposed to come home and cook you some dinner too. Like, you know, it's like, and whether or not we talk about it and like, or like, this is the ideal, people say, no, that's not really the ideal. And it's like, Okay, let's just see what's actually played out.
That's part of it, is that there's also a language part of it, right? So our language, the English language, it love means something. And so what does that mean? Well, we don't really know. I mean, that the word love is kind of, I mean, it's defined, but it's undefined, right? And so everybody has their own kind of definition of what this word means. And so whenever you get into a relationship with a new person, you kind of have to find this new balance of what does love mean to you? If I say I love you, does that mean that I want to be with you forever? Or does that mean that I just love you and I just like you so much? You know, I don't know. I mean, I say I love you to my cats all the time. They don't judge that. You know, they're just like, cool, whatever. You're petting me. You just fed me food. But there's this language thing that goes on with this word. And if you look at other languages, you find that they have other words to describe the various differentiations of the feeling of love. And we don't, you know, we just have the word love, and we have the word like, and that's a cool word, but, you know, that's not sufficient to really describe what it is that we're feeling at all times about love, because love is a super complex and all-encompassing thing.
It's funny with language. You know, I have a friend that's Italian that was saying, man, you Americans, you make up so many weird words, you know, or just like take something. I mean, look at the transformation of different words, where it's like you follow the etymology, and what it means now is something completely different, you know, than what it originally started out as. So it's interesting to think about, you know, how much. It's even like I think about traditions or something, like our stories, or like what words we're using to describe things. Like, they have their own vibration, they have their own story, but now it's evolved and changed, and we're using it in a different form, or we've added, you know, we've added something onto it to make it more playful or whatever. And then I threw that in, whatever. Like, what does that mean? And that we put that in so much. We plug in those filler things so often in language, and so when we're actually talking about these complex ideas like love, I don't know that we're actually really understanding what we're saying to each other. But the stories and those words, a lot of them, even just like marriages, you know, I go to a ceremony and it's really funny. Like, people are doing the thing, you know, they're like, well, this is when we do this and this is when we do that. And I'm like, do you really connect with this tradition right now? Are you really present in it? Or are you just echoing what you've been told? And so it's funny, I think, in relationships, I love you, what does that mean? Well, I've loved in the past, and in the past, that meant I got hurt, so I'm going to carry that into the present moment. Or my parents went through this story, and like, how much of the past, like, are we really living in the 21st century, or are we just reliving and echoing these stories of the past?
And how much of that story, like you said, are we living out from our parents consciously or unconsciously because of things that we've experienced and want to avoid? And so we think by, I'm going to avoid it, like that is actually going to make it so that we're not, that just not being present to it is going to make it not be the case, because it isn't. I remember we were talking about the love, and like how saying I love you is a game changer these days in relationships. You know, used to be that there was other things that were game changers that involved a lot more serious actions. But now saying I love you to somebody is a game changer. And I remember one of my roommates overheard my partner say I love you for the first time. And they, like, I think they literally stopped breathing for a second. They were like, wow, like, you guys haven't been seeing each other that long. And it was like, I tell you I love you. And she stopped. She got it. It's like, you tell everybody you love them, but all of a sudden, because, you know, it's more of an intimate relationship, it's like you should be guarded with your love, which then ends up preventing you from having a connection with that person because you're guarding yourself. Mm-hmm. And so it's just interesting how that is become something to stay away from. And I would really like for you, Kat, to share what you were talking about earlier about the love and how love is really all that exists. Remember that?
Yeah, I mean, I Misty bringing up love and like, and how, again, such fear around love, where I was comparing, I compare love to heat. And when measuring heat, there is no such thing as cold. Cold is just an absence of heat. It's all variations of heat. And I feel like love is what makes up the, as cheesy as that is, it's true. I really believe that. And so, why do we treat it like this rare and precious thing? I mean, yes, it is, but it's everything. And so shying away from that, I think, is just silly, and you're denying reality. And so being able to share love, and love should be easy. And like we were saying before today, talking about liking, it's actually, to me, like, liking is the rare thing. Liking is kind of the unique thing. I can love you and not like you. I can love you and not want to spend time with you. And I can love you and actually really, like, you drive me nuts. But, you know, the whole love thy enemy thing. So, yeah, I think love is the most abundant. It's the building blocks of life. Whatever that energy is that we see shining out of each other's eyes, I mean, that is the same thing.
I think it's really important what you said, too, about the loving you and not liking you. Because, yeah. I mean, like, that is, like, my brother and I's relationship in a nutshell. Like, and, you know, and other times with other people, it's like you feel, like, deep connections with them, but you're not necessarily liking their behavior at that moment, you know? Yeah. And it's like, I wish that was, you know, I'm so happy that now I have that expression at my disposal.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I was thinking of you talking about you with your partner and, you know, new friends and, like, I'm fairly new to town, and so it's like I'm having to, like, break, and that's just anything, you know, you meet new people and then you, like, okay, when is it that I can, like, smack them on the butt, and when is it that I can, like, you know, say these, like, with these different levels of comfort with our friends. And it was funny with my friend, I was like, now don't take this the wrong way, but I love you. Like, it was so funny to me to just, like,
Don't take this the wrong way.
It's like I'm going to insult them, or, you know, it shouldn't be that way.
I don't want to have sex with you right now. I'm just telling you that I love you. It's great.
Yeah, don't have to take it too seriously or too deeply. But, you know, it's not a word that's tossed around too easily. You know, a lot of people, I think, have a hard time just saying those words general. And so feeling it, let alone saying it, it's really challenging.
It's quite interesting, actually. Like, I have an old boss that I can say, love you long time, or I can say, love ya, and that's cool. Like, that's okay. But if I'm like, I love you, that's weird. Like, you have to put a comic inflection into it, and that's acceptable, you know? But then as soon as you say it in a serious way, then it's a little bit uncomfortable.
I would agree that there's something very different, like, it, culturally, and from my own experience, to say that I say I love you is very different than love ya.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, it's, you know, and I have been the person that has been like, oh, they didn't say I love you. They said love ya. Like, honestly, that, like, you know, like, that, like, are they just saying it because they're like, they feel that I need it back. So they're saying, love ya. But it's like, instead of saying, I love you, there's a difference in how it's like taking, you know, that ownership that we were talking about our own emotions, and then placing them on the object of desire, and in a really intentional and direct way, versus a like more casual and informal, which I think more people would be okay with. Like, you know, like, oh yeah, I love you, see you later.
Yeah, and I think that it comes from those, like we're talking about, these models that we've been given, and what does society tell us is love? And again, we have this one word, and it's this, I love you, as I'm in love with you, and I'm in love with you means I want to have children with you, and you know, it's like this, all these implications.
Whoa.
It's so much. And because we've been given this one idea, and I think that's what's been perpetuated, you know, through you know, films and whatever, you know, like all these, you know, the love stories that we've been given are these deep forever loves, and love is forever, but and love is perfect, but we are not. We are imperfect and impermanent, and so our experience of love varies, and I think that fear, like that, like love, yeah, like the uncomfortability with really plugging into the love, is because we've also been given this misconception of what that again, that it is everything, that it is so you can love and not be nervous, you know, like don't be afraid to love, because it's like you're loving whether you know it or not, so whether you choose to identify it. But I think there's, yeah, that fear of it is that people are thinking that they're putting out the wrong, oh, you don't take it that way, you know, because
I'm not obsessed with you.
Yeah.
I just like you a lot.
I don't want to start a life with you. I just like you because, yeah, you bought me a burrito.
Yes, yeah. And we'll keep you around if you, yeah, keep buying
if
me burritos.
If you keep buying me burritos.
Then that's less love and more,
I really enjoy you.
Contractual,
yeah.
It sounds like. So, yeah, I'd like to get more into hearing your lady stories about the motherhood topic specifically. You know, we talked a little bit about marriage, we talked a little bit about love, but like, what has been your particular role, or not role, I should say, because neither of you are mothers in this room. I mean, I have my own theories about, you know, we're all mothers after a certain age, whether we like it or not as well. But yeah, so after we hear some words from Mr. Jim Hightower, we'll be getting right into that.
When a big name retailer finds its sales in a slow downward spiral, the geniuses in the executive suite often try to keep their profits up.
I guess Mr. Jim Hightower was done sharing whatever he had to share, because it's not playing. All right, so we're going to just jump back into our conversation here, and we're talking about the melting pot and the modern world and the melting pot, what our views are and the stories we've been told, and how that has shaped our current reality from these three women that are sitting in the studio talking to you. If you are sitting there and want to share your own personal experience, whether you are of the male persuasion or the female, then you are welcome and invited to join the conversation. 895-1114. This program is not necessarily represent the views of the KZFR or the staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. So feel free to call in and say what you choose to. We're talking about love in the 21st century. And as mentioned before, we attempted to go to that break, we were going to be talking about the stories around motherhood. I mean, I feel like that is of ample conversation, since, you know, we're all three women in the room. So anybody want to take it first?
Well, shit. I mean, I was a nanny for like 6 months. So, I mean, that was interesting, because here you go. Okay, so I'm 33 right now, and I'm a nanny, and I see the way that kids are raised and the way that things are in the home. And are you kidding me? This is difficult. This is not easy stuff at all. And I'm supposed to do this? Like, this is something that I'm supposed to do in my life? I mean, man, and I don't get really rewarded for it. I don't know. I mean, what does that mean? Well, then you have to really look at this like diffuse version or this diffuse idea of love. Well, your kids love you. You know, they love you for it. Well, okay, that's great. They do, for sure. They also love me, who is the nanny, who doesn't really do that much at all, you know? So, and they actually kind of like me better, by the way, you know, because I'm not the one who's putting
they
all the
They may like you better, but they may not love you more.
But they don't love me more, right? And so, I don't know. I mean, that's a real hard question for me to answer, because I have found that the people who want to be parents the most are the people who've had the least experience with being parents. And I've had more experience with being a parent than the vast majority of my peers, and it scares me to death.
So
that's all I know.
On the topic of the story around motherhood, do you feel like that's something that you from a young age knew was a societal expectation, that you would one day be a mother? Like the society expected it of you because you're capable physically. we're not going to go into the emotionally and intellectually capable, because that's
a
whole different conversation.
To be, aren't you? I mean, you're expected to be the person who's capable of it, right? And so if you're not the most suited for it in your partnership, well, that's tough for you, you know. That's just the
and the children
is. Yeah, and for your children, sorry about that, you know. But I don't know. I mean, I think so. I think, right, that's the expectation, is that, okay, you're a woman, this is your role, and you know, if you don't feel comfortable, you better not have any, you know. Because if you're a man and you don't feel super comfortable with it, well, you don't have to really take full responsibility for it. You can just lay that right
Ooh,
on your peers.
Ouch.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, burn. Well.
Burn.
I don't know. I mean, tell me I'm wrong here. I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not a man. And
I
don't think, I think that a lot of men do, you know, take ownership of their choices, but that's a whole nother topic for a show. As far
well, I am not trying to get into a whole nother topic of a whole nother show. That's
okay.
Sure.
Okay,
I definitely identify with. I don't know if it's expectations, but it was the reality that I knew. I came from a mother that she's like, to me, she's like the archetypal mother. I really lucked out in this life. I mean, she took mother. I didn't realize that not everyone took being a parent as a real, like, full-time gig. Like, my mom didn't drink growing up. She didn't smoke. You know, she was my mother. But she worked. I mean, she worked her butt off, and she, you know, she had to travel and stuff. But I never felt like she wasn't there. She was always supportive. So I'm also pretty a motherly sort of creature, and I had that, you know, my mother has seven brothers and sisters. I grew up in a large family, and wow. And a lot of cousins, and I had a lot of, you know, aunts and uncles running around, so the family life is something, like, that was very comfortable, I was very comfortable with, and so I think I always knew that I would be a mother, and now it's interesting really checking in, and like we were talking today, you know, about being aware of our thoughts and wanting to really question where they're coming from, and it's been a doozy for me. I'm like, is this something that I really want? You know, in this day and age where there's overpopulation and all this crazy stuff, and then the witnessing my friends have children and really comprehending what that sacrifice is and how what that shift in your, you know, like I wake up every day and I'm like, wow, I don't have a kid. I can, you know, I have all this energy and space to do, like, and I see these new moms are like, you know, don't take that for granted. I haven't slept in 3 years. So it's
maddening.
Yeah, so it's amazing. I have so much appreciation for mothers, and I feel like I will always be a, like, mother figure in my life. But it's been really interesting wanting to identify, like, is that something that I just learned, just that I just assumed was the only model, because it was the only model for me growing up. Everyone, I'm one of the only people in my family my age that doesn't have children, you know. And so yeah, it's interesting to, like, review that now and make. In making my own story and being like, is that
right?
Is that something I truly?
Well, and by the
with?
Way, you know, we are a group of ladies that are close to 30 or in our 30s who do not have children. this is fairly a new phenomenon, you know, as far as things go.
As far as society goes, absolutely.
Yeah, think about that. I mean, that's a big thing. And so what does that mean, really? What does that mean for, you know, the quote-unquote, the future?
We got past the programming. You know? No.
Right. Yeah, I mean, have we, you know, said, oh, we screw you, programming. We'll do our own thing. Or are we doing the thing that the new programming is telling us to do? I don't know what that is.
Interesting.
All I know is that I don't have kids. You don't have kids. You don't have kids. You know, and
there's only three of us in the room.
And there's only three of us in the room. So this is 100%.
Yeah.
It's 100% agreement here.
Yeah.
And that's statistically valid as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely.
I'm just messing. But I just think that this is so rare, you know, and so we need to think about this for a second. You know, what does this mean right now that we are in a place where we could even easily get three women into the room that are in their 30s that do not have children?
I'm not in my 30s
yet. Aren't even thinking about it.
Sorry.
You look 30. My bad.
Kat is the
only
one.
Well, you just ruined my whole point. I'm just going to shut up now and sit back.
So, if you're just tuning in, we are Loving the 21st Century, and Kat, Misty, and I are talking about the modern melting pot and the particular perspective that it is shaped in the three women that we are in a intergenerational cultural fondue pot of life that is has a lot of different views about the stories that we're told. And we're going to talk more about the stories of sort of what the media has projected upon us here shortly. But if you want to join the conversation, feel free to give us a call, 895-1114. For myself, I knew, I don't know, from a really young age that, like, it was expected of me, not just by society, but by my family. I remember, like, my mom saying, when you're a mother, and I'm like, 9. I'm like, what? Yeah. I didn't even have, what? What are you talking about? I'm not going to be a mom. Like, and I do, I agree, Kat. I think that I really lucked out as well, that my mother is an amazing mother. She definitely took it very seriously, and she takes being a good person very seriously. So I've been really fortunate to have that role model in my life. And I definitely feel that I'm a mother without being a mother. Like, I haven't given birth to any children, and, you know, I'm thankful for that every morning. as not pleasant as that might sound to some of my friends that have children, which I honor and appreciate their children very much. But being able to go home alone is a blessing to me in my life right now. You know, I'm still in the process of birthing many things in my life that just don't happen to be children. And how, by being a role model in children's life, I've been a teacher, you know, most of my life. Even when I was in high school, I taught children. And just recently, I was working with children from the ages of 5 to 14. And how, you know, we are constantly in a position of role modeling for the ones around us.
Sure.
So, and that's adults and children alike. So it is, we are mothers, we are fathers. Like, just because we haven't accepted that role, you know, by physically participating in it, it's, you know, taking ownership and responsibility of our part, which is interesting, which brings me to another kind of pondering of how do you appropriately be that in our society when our society has a very specific story around who emphasizes and who educates your children. So, meaning, like, if, you know, you're a friend of a parent, then what is your role? You know, unless otherwise established, the story that we are told in the media is that mom and dad are the ones that you answer to, and everybody else, you know, just kind of sits around and waits for their opinion to be asked.
That's funny. That came up for me recently. I was with some friends, and you know, they're awesome. They, like, everybody holds the baby, and I think it's great. And I was sharing that I grew up in this large family, and so we had, you know, all my aunts and uncles. It's like the kids kind of ran around in their own pack and sort of self-policed. But if you were caught doing anything, you know, the adults, you respected all of the adults, you know, and And I remember this parent being like, oh my gosh, you know, I wouldn't, like, I don't tell my other friends' kids what, you know, no, or, you know, like, they don't parent other children. But for me, it ties into, I used to live on the Big Island of Hawaii, and there is this whole model there, you know, like, I was anti-cat. I taught at a school, and, like, any child, like, auntie, like, they don't have to know your name. They know that you're an adult, and therefore you're an auntie or you're an uncle, you know, and, like, it's this kind of, like, we all live on this concept. I love this model of, well, we all live on the island, and so in order to survive with limited resources, like, how this model that's been passed down of, like, we depend on each other to live, and so it's like one family, like this idea of one family. And but ultimately I think about the planet Earth as like an island in space, you know, so that model actually could prevail. And like in this age of information, and as, you know, I think we were given this model of separation of like nuclear family and all that, you know, and
absolutely.
And we were in more isolated units. But now in this, you know, with the internet and everything and our ability to communicate and connect with people, I'd like to see more of that dissolve and recognize that like we are all each other's responsibility, and it's not just about your children but the children. And like the concept of even like, I loved you talking about, you know, how you're birthing these ideas. You know, it's like we can get past the literal representations of things because we're an evolving species. So like, let's get into the essence of it and the essence of motherhood and the essence of like personhood and what that is. And so it expands, you know, and it transcends and it can go beyond.
Absolutely. And what you're referring to, Kat, with the auntie and the uncle, I feel like that is definitely, you know, I've seen it growing and alive in this Chico community, that,
sure.
You know, the broadening scope of the nuclear family, that it's not just mom and dad, and there's just like adapting and evolving families and how to coexist in a way that seems more natural, that seems less like separated and detached. But for people that are not used to that sort of life, you know, of letting anybody else in, mm-hmm. that might be listening to this show, it's, you know, it's an opportunity to really consider like who in your life is able to support you in that role. Because really, you know, we are all taking care of each other. We are all a part of each other's lives. And the more we are active to accept that and start writing different stories, instead of the story that's like, man, I'm tired of seeing the same movie that has the same story about the same woman that's looking for the same man that's going to rescue her, that's going to, yeah. that she's going to have children with, and she's going to build this house, or he's going to build the house, and then they're going to just be okay. Like, nobody lives that story. Like, stop reading your kids those stories, stop showing your kids those movies, like start really having real conversations about the dynamics that are. And I feel like, you know, we in my life, I'm very fortunate to see that happening. And I feel like that we need to find a way to make that more of what the media is showing children.
For sure.
As they grow up. Because we look at how, you know, the images that young girls are growing, being shown, we wonder why, you know, there's these like insane crime rates. We wonder why we have these like, you know, young teen pregnancies, and like 16 and pregnant is like the best show on MTV. Like, come on, like we are idolizing behaviors that we don't want. So really providing an opportunity to write a different story. If you could write a different story, Misty, put you on the spot.
Oh,
she said she's, guys. what would the story look like?
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Put me on the spot for sure. Okay, so one of the things that I think is that, I mean, genders in general have certain specific strengths, right? Okay, so you have your male gender that has like kind of a physical strength, and you have your female gender that has this thing. But this is general. This is not, you know, across the board by any means. And so I really do think, you know, we are an individualistic society. So okay, well, let's embrace that. Let's embrace that individualism and let's go with it. And instead of trying to then say, we're all individuals, but yet you fit into this social classification, which I am then going to put you in. And because you're in that, then this is the thing that I expect of you. No, okay, so if I'm an individual, then judge me on my individual merits. And I may be stronger than this guy next to me, and that's okay. And so I think that would be quite lovely. And then if we want to ditch the whole individualism thing, which, you know, most of Europe, by the way, doesn't buy into, then that's okay too. Then we need to go a different route. But I quite like the individualistic experiment that we're in right now. And so let's go for it. You know, let's say, okay, Misty, as an individual, well, I'm not as nurturing as your average female. You know, you have your statistical averages because you don't negate science.
Well, the statistics of this room.
Right. This is only the statistics of this room.
We're
changing everything.
Yep.
But hey, how about the cowboy hanging over there on the wall?
There's a
Woody. What about him?
He looks pretty nurturing. Look at that face.
Arms are wide open.
Yeah.
He's very scary to me.
Good observation.
Very masculine. So
it's Woody from the Toy Story.
It's Woody from the Toy Story.
Nobody knows what we're looking at. So yes, it's a cartoon character that she's saying is threatening.
Well, he's just staring.
He
at
does
me,
look crucified.
Okay, yeah.
Just saying.
We digress.
Whatever we want to be as a society, we can choose to be. So I like this individualistic thing, and I think we should go for it. And I think if we want to go for it, let's go for it. Let's do it. Let's allow each person to manifest their own idea of who they are. Let's not try to put them into boxes. Let's see what happens. And, you know, if it doesn't work out, I mean, what is the difference between what it is right now, where there are, you know, or what it was in 1955 when lots of women were very unhappy with their roles and lots of men were super happy with theirs? Like, what is the difference?
Well, I don't know that I love this female dominated conversation and stuff, but I also don't think that model was working for men either. And I just want to put that in there for all you males out there listening. Because you know that model also included, you know, men being disposable soldiers, and you know it wasn't all just that they were businessmen with their coffee and cigarettes and going home to their wives making them dinner. You know, I think that also meant that, like, sorry, you get to go risk your life for our country, and like women and children get to stay home. So I think that model hurt everybody, and that model of separation and specific roles, when we are more like, I think, on a spectrum, when you even with gender, it's not either or. Like, humans are so much more complicated than just this or that,
right?
So I think that model was really, yeah.
Yeah, you bring up an interesting point, Kat, because I've had this conversation with a few men at my house on different occasions about the, you know, the box that we often talk about living in as women, and how we have a certain image to live up to, and how wonderful and free it must be to be a man, to be able to not have that. And that's not the case. You know,
Don't you dare cry.
Yeah, don't you dare cry. Don't you dare, like, get upset about anything. Don't you, like, show, you know, your emotional side about anything, good or bad. You know, be creatively expressive. Like, these things are generally associated with the feminine. Mm-hmm. And, like, you have to be very secure in your masculinity to not be affected by those images. And maybe because there are men that have the ability to stand in that space, but they realize that they're, like, how they might be seen by other men. You know, so it's easy to say the grass is greener, you know, and it's easier on that side. But yeah, that everybody has a role to some extent that they're having to live up to or not live up to, but just to become aware of. And that's sort of what, you know, this whole conversation has been around, is what roles are we expected to be playing? And we, like, didn't get the, you know, we didn't get the notes. We didn't get any information on what role we are supposed to be playing. But yet people look at us and expect or see certain things, whether that's a child that is going to school and learning about women's roles in society. And, you know, it's still associated with the mother, even though it's also associated with the career woman. And the same thing with the father. Like, is it the father first, or is it, you know, the breadwinner first? Mm-hmm. And this is something that, like, we don't talk about. It just is. It's just the things that, like, we are subconsciously taught and expected to uphold and never have a conversation about it. We are completely role modeled this. So hopefully you have just been the most amazing parents or been raised by the most amazing parents that are having these conversations with you, or just are around really super amazing people that are just really challenging this in their own life, not to live up to something that's already predetermined, but to remember that it's always a choice what we end up doing. Because otherwise, all you got is the television and maybe YouTube.
Well, that has been the model, but now, I mean, I'm seeing, like, there's blogs and there's, I mean, as much as we can put down Facebook, it's a pretty amazing tool to, like, share Absolutely. Perspectives. You know, like, I remember being a kid and, you know, it's election time and I'm like, who did you guys vote for, you know? And, you know, they're like, we voted for Clinton, but don't, you know, don't tell anybody. And I just remember it was so taboo to talk about religion or politics or anything deeply personal. You know, that's been the model. Like, we've been given this model of separation. But I see that breaking through. But just as, you know, it was my mother who couldn't wear pants until her senior year, that was all wrapped up still just one generation removed, you know. So that is just the technology curve is so steep. You know, we've been opening up so much, the ability to share experiences, and now you don't just get the news from the media. People can upload videos. I was there. This is what happened. And, you know, like, there's an ability for people to share their experiences in a way that is unprecedented. So I'm feeling really hopeful. It's just it's so new. It's been changing so rapidly that I think we have yet to see the full effects of what that is.
Absolutely. I definitely agree that it is, that things are changing, and that, you know, people are having conversations that they haven't ever had. And so, you know, as tumultuous as I think Facebook can get at times, because people are saying things that they would never say to anybody in public.
Sure.
It is helpful, and it is opening doorways for people to experience and to hopefully, you know, process that awareness. But again, those are for people that are seeking out this information, that are choosing to actively be, you know, an agent in their own self-awareness. And as idealistic as I'd like to be, that's just not always the reality.
Oh, sure.
And so it's important to remember that if you are a person that is looking at these things and are, you know, wanting to set a different example for the boys and girls that are around you, that, you know, that you really can be whatever you want to be, that you really can't, and that doesn't mean, like, you can be a fashion designer, or you can be a dancer, or you can be a artist, or, you know, meaning you can literally decide in each moment if you're going to do what you've been told to do. Like, socially, is it okay to cry if you're a boy? Like, who cares? Cry. If you're having an emotional response to something, don't stop yourself from experiencing that. If you're a girl and you want to, you know, speak up for yourself, like, don't, because you've been role modeled, you know, that it's, you know, not ladylike to raise your voice, then, you know, show that side to these children that are growing up. Because really, you know, we can't lean on the media and expect that they're gonna change anytime soon. It is changing, you know, and it is slowly progressing, but really what we have is each other to be modeling that for one and one another. That's the story I want to see. I want to see Sure. people living in their truths. I want to see people speaking up for themselves instead of, like, just, you know, pushing it down and suppressing their thoughts. I want people to be helping each other out. I want to be less dependent on a system that doesn't care about us and more dependent on the people that do. Because, you know, dependency doesn't have to be a bad thing. Vulnerability doesn't have to be a bad thing. These, again, are parts of our language that we have decided are bad things. So that's my story. I want my story to be like, you know, love who you love, share your love, be willing to challenge the things you do not agree with, be curious about the world, and, you know, live in the moment.
For sure.
You know, that's the story I want to see. Can Disney make that story for us?
You know, I'm into it.
Is that what Frozen's about? I don't think so.
Let it go. Yeah, well, it's like, I love that there was a quote from John Lennon. I think he said it was, like, in fifth grade or something, and they asked him what he wanted to be when he grew up. And he said, I want to be happy. And they're like, you don't understand the exercise. He's like, nope, I'm pretty sure that you don't. And and just thinking about, you know, as we do integrate, as, you know, as women aren't property and men aren't property. You know, there's the you're mine and you're, like that separation of like black or white. And as we integrate, it's also like an integration of how our mind works. Like you're allowed to cry, you're allowed to be emotional, you're allowed to open up that part of your mind. And women, you're allowed to be analytical and commanding. And you know, like as we open that up, I think it's kind of like you talking about the evolution of motherhood. That like you don't have to have a literal child to be a mother, but just like to be happy and like that, like that when we can get into the concepts of like it's not about a surface detail, it's not about a thing, like a physical thing, it's about like how we live,
right? And I just want to add here before we transition to Ecotopia, who's coming up next, that if you like the story you're living, then by all means keep living that story. But if the story that you've been told and the story that we continuously are reading to each other over and over and over again about the certain roles that we play or the certain things that we have to do, whether that's for men or for women, about love, about marriage, about divorce, about being a mother, about being a father, whatever the story is, I mean, if it's already old and you get really tired every time you read it, write a different story. We are totally in full capability of making up a better story, one that makes us all really happy in the end, and one that really identifies us with our real truth, not the truth that we get a job, we have, you know, we have a career, we buy a house, we get old and retire and then do, you know, and then are happy hopefully then, because now is the only moments we have. So let's write that story together. That's what I'm hoping for.
I'm into it.
So you want to intro this song, because I'm gonna have to
I just thought it was really appropriate for everything that we're talking about. It's this righteous band that I heard underneath the walnut tree at the Grub Cooperative. They're called Be Calm Honcho.
Yes.
And they just, I was just so amazed that just that whole family out there and that whole show of like, talk about, you know, present day human beings. Like, here we are underneath this tree making pizzas in a pizza oven, people kind of like taking back their power and like growing food from the land and just being together. I just felt like this band like really embodied like the modern human.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Misty and Kat, for joining us today.
Yes.
Thanks
so much.
And Julian and Emily Rose, wherever you are in the world, we hope that you're traveling safe. We miss you. And I'm sure we'll be seeing you soon. Okay. And this is Honcho Dreams. Well, we're going to try to find it.
Oh, well, you know, this is what happens when you're winging it. Sometimes it... it just doesn't go in the flow.
Sometimes people just have to realize that this is live radio and you just have to enjoy the process and be present with the moment.
Enjoy the silence.
It's, you know, you're not always going to get a bunch of silence in the world, so there you go.
This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And we're also now being broadcast over KCMJ, community-powered radio in Colorado Springs. Tonight's Ecotopia will be featuring radio broadcasts created by the 5th and 6th graders at Wildflower Charter School, exploring the 1920s, 30s, and 40s.